We'll do it live. Do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live. And thing sucks.
And WBAI, you're on the air. Good morning.
Morning. I think you guys are doing a terrific job. There's some wonderful people overnight. I think Max Schmid is brilliant and Arpo Martin is brilliant, but I don't know how many people get to hear them. And I want to say thanks. Tremendous job.
Well, thank you very much for that.
Your radio turned on. It would be a good start to enjoy this evening's Dustbin of History. I'm your curator and janitor, Max Schmid. Well, we're going to hear about some TV doctors in just a moment with Gene Shepard, a lost episode from the Rudy Collection. March 17th, 1966. And then Shep will tell you how to enjoy a vacation. We also have the Gemini 8 astronauts just returned to Earth after some harrowing trouble in space. And we will have a full 5 minutes of news at the end of the program, so we better get to it, shall we? Lost to Gene Chabot. By the way, in the background, you got City Boy with Oh Doctor Doctor. Before that, Robert Palmer, Bad Case of Loving You. But let's turn to Gene Shepard, shall we? Here in the Dustbin of History, WBAI New York.
Siree, peekaboo. Cha cha cha. Be careful, I'm feeling extremely. Hello, hello, testing. Hello, hello. Can you hear me out there? Hello, hello, hello. Hello. Yeah, hello, hello. There, it's coming through. Thank you. Peekaboo. Down by the old mill stream. Be careful, I'm feeling extremely playful tonight. And, as you know, that can be very dangerous. What was that great line somebody said recently in one of the newspapers? Oh, by George, it was Playboy, yeah. In a review, they said, camp, 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 the boys are marching. Satan is back again.
That's coming in.
Cha-cha-cha. Are you prepared for me right now at this time before we do anything at all to make a terribly rotten, almost totally un-American remark? I mean, do you think I can get away with it this time of the week, this time of the year, huh? You really think so? Well, all right, I'm going to say it anyway. Let the chips fall where they may. Let the chips fall where they may. If I walk past the marquee that advertises, if I see one more gigantic quarter-page spread for, on behalf of, one more side-splitting, rollicking, satiric, tongue-in-cheek, spy movie, I am going to flow up all over the place here. I'm going to flow up all over just right here. If I see once more, just one more of those, and I've had, I wonder who it is who has an insatiable hunger for that. You, oh, please. I mean, how many can you see before you've seen them all? You know, with the brassieres that shoot and the whole bit. How many times can you laugh at the same jazz? I suppose it's like little kids, though. Do you know that little children, I think there's a certain type of mind that is basically a little kid for all time. And, you know, little kids can laugh at the same story over and over and over again. Any good teacher will tell you that, any person who's ever read to kids can tell you that kids want to hear the same thing over and over and over and over and again. And they laugh at it every time. Every time they run across, wow. At camp, the boys are marching off again to war. You know, speaking of the camp. Did you hear the sickening stories about the number of idiotic people who called up the network because in the middle of Batman, they kept breaking in with very urgent, high-level news bulletins about the predicament that our astronauts were in? And I mean, they were in a predicament, you know, a genuine pickle. And thousands of people called in from all over the country complaining. Get back to the important stuff. What is this ridiculous stuff about these two guys up there in that thing, for crying? And would you please bring me a little of that? That's it, a little salute to whatever it is, music. Very good. That's it. Let's give a salute to the eternal decadence deep down inside of us. Barry Farber said he's writing a book called It's Just 29 Days, 29 Shopping Days Till Armageddon. Oh, man. You know, I'm beginning to have some terrible suspicions that since we have bred a gigantic monster television oriented, they lay there by their television set or in their movie house, wherever it is they get vicarious thrills. They lay there by that television set like suckling pigs. I'm hoping one day some television manufacturer will really come up with a TV set that has the genuine article sticking out of it. And all the people, you know, that are really hung on this can lie there and they can just suckle at it. See? They can mainline Johnny Carson or mainline Batman or mainline the Beverly Hillbillies. And all the rest of the world can go on, you know, out there in that real world. And I'm beginning to have a strong suspicion that large numbers of people, I mean a significant membership, a significant group of our population, have lost all touch with reality. And that reality is what is going to happen next Wednesday night on ABC at 7:30 in prime time. That is reality. Really. Dr. Kildare's hospital is a heck of a lot realer than Bellevue. Really. A friend of mine, a doctor, a very funny type guy, he says, you know, that they've got what they call the TV syndrome. And he's an internist. He does a lot of diagnostic work. And he says he never watches it, see. He just knows what is on Ben Casey by what kind of complaints he gets.
that week. And you know, they all come in with the same symptoms that they saw Dina Merrill have last week, and everybody was really worried about Dina Merrill. You know, she was twitching, and her ears were flopping, and she had all this this rare microbe that was imported from Tibet. Finally, got her because she was eating raw yeast or something, and here she is, her ears are flipping and flopping, and they all come in with that. And he says, "Of course, this is the TV syndrome." And he says, you know, more and more, it's getting to the point now where nobody believes him. First of all, he's a little bald. There's never been a television doctor who really was good who was bald. And he's over 25. And he says, you know, it's a fact that there's never been a good television doctor that was over 25. And what's even worse than that, he's under 5'7" in height. And he says, we all know that all good TV doctors are well over 6 feet tall. They're blonde, wavy hair. And he says, all the nurses are madly in love with him. As a matter of fact, all of his nurses hate him. He says, no wonder my patient, I wouldn't go to me, he said. Believe me, I wouldn't go to me. And I understand that a lot of the medical schools today are no longer giving what used to be, you know, the traditional examination for a guy to get into medical school. They cast the new classes now. They cast them. You have to send in your composites, your credits. Make sure that you've had proper dramatic training. If you went through a couple of dramatic clubs in high school, you might make it into obstetrics or gynecology or any one of the more serious fields of study. And my doctor says, because you know, it's pretty hard. He said, when you're sitting there and you have to spend most of your time now taking makeup lessons. He has a guy comes in, make him up every day now. And he has his room, his waiting room lit now, like a set. He said, you know, it used to be that he'd have a lot of magazines and he had his notes and all that around there. And he would continually, he says, you know, I keep forgetting to wear my white coat. He says, you know, I've never once seen Casey or Kildare without their white coats on. And he said, I keep forgetting to wear my white coat. And he says, and for over 6 months, he said he put on his white coat and he did not notice any appreciable uptake or upswing in his patient's respect for him. And then he realized what it was, that he was wearing that kind of white coat that real doctors wear, you know, with the little strings that hang all over it. It's all wrinkled. And he says, he just had to get rid of that. Now he has his white coats made at Brooks, and they're beautiful. They're Chinese silk. Magnificent. They're imported, and they have padded shoulders, and he says they have this big, great, big gold medical insignia, you know, with the snake and all the scepter and all. It's a big gold one there, and he says, and he has his name under there, and he says that he really, today, he says he had a wonderful experience today. He said one of his patients came in, and he was beginning to lose a little faith in him. He could tell that. He says, you can tell the way the patient was, and he mentioned to the patient, he just in casual, he just mentioned that he switched from MCA and he's being handled by William Morris now. And he says his patient just brightened up like mad because he understands Frank Sinatra's handled by William Morris. And so, I mean, you know, it's all, give me a little bit of that. Well, just a little bit there. Just bring it up there. I wonder those people that called up about Batman, you know, they think they're looking at adventure. You see, Batman, I wonder whether or not they think Batman's adventures are more exciting and more meaningful than the real adventures of two guys 100 miles above the Earth in a capsule that any minute now is liable to fly apart. I mean, has Batman done anything that jazzy yet? Has he? Or does he just keep jumping in and out of windows? You know, speaking of Batman, I read a little note in one of the gossip columns. It says the actor who plays Batman is a little abashed now, because the girl that he proposed to, some chick who's a secretary of some big producer, has turned them down because she says that what she's really interested is in conquest, and he should really be harder to get. How's that for role reversal? That today it's the chicks that are looking for the one-night stands, and bring it up there, big time. Cha 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 Very good, very good. Oh, you mean you're stuck. You're stuck with that whole scene, huh? I mean, you really like it. Well, I guess there's not much you can do about that. You pick it up one way, you lay it down the other. One guy called up, he called up from the Midwest, and he said, what am I going to do? He's yelling at the network. He says, I've got this whole house full of kids and everybody. We're all watching Batman. You keep breaking in with those ridiculous news notes. What are we going to do here? And he was very angry. I just don't suppose that many people recognize the breadth and the depth and the longevity and the solidity and the richness of the mother load of pure idiocy that is rampant today. You only have to work in a radio station or a television station where there are large numbers of anonymous callers and writers and all that to really understand how deep this thing goes. Genuinely understand it. And it constantly, even the old grizzled veterans, it surprises. That year after year it grows wilder and wilder. And, you know, critics are constantly berating the television networks or the radio networks too, for not carrying important things. But they don't have to, they don't have to face the irate wrath of a gigantic, know-nothing, klutz-headed, cottage cheese-brained population that couldn't care less about important events. Absolutely could not. And they really, the calls will pour in. And it's not, you would ordinarily think it would be from runny nose kids or from housewives that call and say, I don't know how come they could cancel Peyton Place. Peyton Place is, I just can't stand. What is this man talking about? Viet something. Some foreign place. I don't know who's that fat man with the bald head that keeps banging his shoe down? I don't know. No, it is not that kind. It is not that kind of person. In fact, I am vaguely beginning to suspect that is the kind of person who is, quite often either silent or is actually watching the major event that's going on. I suspect, too, that this is very closely coupled with the world of camp. And you know, when you take a look at major news magazines and so on, you'll find that they will give equal time and space and importance and even the cover to some totally trivial epic. Take for example, Life magazine now. In the middle of this is a time that tries men's souls, to use an old cliche. I mean, we've got more fantastic news worthy stories around than I think any time probably since World War II. It's just popping all over. And so they will devote 8 pages to how nervous Barbara Streisand is that it's all going to go away. And that's the major theme of the issue. Not whether Barbara Streisand is doing a new play or Barbara Streisand, but whether, you know, how nervous Barbara Streisand is that it's all going to go away. And so, after all, when big magazines, when big outfits like that will be as deeply concerned over issues of that kind as they are, say, the war at Vietnam or civil rights, then how can you help it if the guy in Chillicothe is like that? He's only the product of what's around him, you know. Speaking of that reminds me, this is WOR AM and FM, New York.
Here's Gene Shepherd for the New York Times. Some smart guy once said that New York Times readers are born and not made. And I suggest that there's a reason. The New York Times is a paragon among world's newspapers, and so are its readers. These are people who attempt to deal with the realities of the world and who feel a sense of responsibility for what's happening. Are New York Times readers born and not made? You can be a self-made man. Strive for the top. Get up there in that rarefied atmosphere of the Mount Everest of newspaper readers. Stand up straight, pull in your stomach, and say, I am a New York Times reader. And then go out and prove it.
Do it today and stay on top. Of all the news, the New York Times. If you're without it, you're not with it. For home delivery, call Murray Hill 70700. That's MU70700.
I'll be loving you, hello, with a love that's true. A well-dressed man wears the suit that looks best on him, even if it has stripes. And the man who knows has his suits made to his exact measure by Woolmouth at money-saving prices. Your Woolmouth made-to-measure specialist will help you select the right model, the right jacket length. There's a guy on the air who keeps saying length, and he lives very close to this studio. One day, I'm going to kick him right into the you-know-what and straighten him out on that. The right jacket length. He'll recommend the lapel and shoulder shapes and the trouser taper that are best for your height, weight, and general build. And it's Woolmouth, friends, if you want a suit that really fits. W-O-H-L-M-U-T-H. Let's see, in Jamaica, there's a Woolmouth store at 16612 Jamaica Avenue. Ask for Gabriel. At Newark, New Jersey, at 208 Market Street, ask for Figaro. I don't know. It's not my problem. All right, hit the thing. What do you mean, Al?
Ask for Al. The bright, clear taste in beer.
All the way.
Miller High Life, the champagne of bottle beer.
That doesn't sound right.
That's Miller High Life.
That doesn't sound right.
The happy sound is about famous Miller High Life beer that has soared in popularity because millions more recognize the traditional quality and heritage of an unequaled, unchanging, truly great beer. Wherever people are living better, you'll find Miller High Life in handy take-home cans, on tap, or in the familiar crystal clear bottles. Next time you want the very finest, ask for Miller High Life, the champagne of bottle beer. Sparkling, flavorful, distinctive.
Hey, that thing is fading. What's the matter there, huh? We have Rover here, speaking of Batmobiles, and it's a great car. And very shortly, I suspect that you're going to be seeing all kinds of them running around. Because this is the time of the year. The guys get the itch. The old new car sickness begins to grab you by the vitals, and your eyes start sparkling, and your tail gets fat and bushy, and you start getting that nervous thing, and you finger your checkbook, and the automobile salesman fingers you. It gets pretty exciting this time of the year, and if you're thinking of making the big thing this year and you really want a car that makes a genuine statement about you, I would suggest you consult with your Rover dealer. You have to negotiate with him. This is a consultation. They don't sell them to everybody, you know. That's the truth. This is the Rover 2000, the magnificent machine, and it fits only one in 10,000. Do you measure up? That's the Rover 2000 out of the fantastic tradition of the British Empire that produced Richard the Lionhearted, Disraeli, and Ringo Starr. This is the 2000, Rover 2000. Okay, shall we get back to life? I can just see this scene, can't you? This guy with his sloping forehead, you know, and he's sitting out there and he's watching his television set, and he's way out someplace. Well, maybe he's way out in Staten Island, or he's out in Worcester, Massachusetts, or someplace, you know, a deep-thinking community. And he's sitting there like 10,000 other neighbors of his own particular ilk, within an immediate radius of where he's sitting, and they're all watching Batman and Robin run around, and they're camping it up, and everything's going on. All of a sudden, there is a note that says, "Your attention, please. We interrupt the program now in progress for an important news note. The astronauts who are rotating about the Earth in orbit are now in dire trouble. We will keep you abreast of the latest developments as they occur. We now return to the program in progress."
"Yes, well, Robin, I say..."
And the guy sits there with that unbelieving look. And for about 2.5 minutes, he continues to watch Batman. But now his faith, you see, in the camp world is beginning to be shaken a little bit, just as ever so slightly, say, that there's something happening out there beyond the walls of his room, something that might conceivably even bear on his life or somehow have a vague imprint on his times. And so he's sitting there. Now he's a little nervous. And then all of a sudden, 5 minutes go past. They go past the second commercial, and the voice comes in.
Your attention, please. We now again interrupt this program to say that they have just lost touch with the capsule. We have no idea. We just know that the capsule was yawing badly at the last report. This could be an extremely dangerous situation, and we are now in the middle of a communication blackout. It looks like it could be the worst. Stay tuned. We will now return to our program in progress.
And he sits there, and suddenly he turns around and he hollers, "Hey, Madge! Madge! What's the matter with this damn television? It's getting the other stations. Yeah, there's this stuff. I don't know. Some rotten news keeps breaking in. I told you to get it fixed. I'm watching Batman. I don't know what it is. Some nutty capsule or something. I don't know. I don't know what they're talking about. Why don't you call a television station? Tell them to do something about it. Yeah. Here it comes on again. I don't know. They're talking about something. The capsule blew up. Oh, get the television on the phone, will ya?" I would like to really look in on one of those. Now, I may sound like I'm being facetious, but I genuinely would like to look in on one of those households. I mean, is there anybody out there listening tonight who felt cheated when they kept breaking in on Batman? I would like to talk to him. No, he wouldn't be listening to this. No, no. Heavens, no, no. He's watching, what would he be watching at this? Who knows, you know, some old burner. Yeah, he's watching some old Hollywood TNS movie. Oh, you don't know what TNS means? That's a technical term that they use around movie lots to describe a certain type of movie. Is there anybody out there who knows what a TNS movie is? No, it is not a Western. It's very similar in some ways, but it's not quite a Western. Yvonne DiCarlo made a lot of them. Victor Manure made a whole bunch of them, too. The TNS movies. What a rotten person I'm getting to be. How many of you know that the slang, semi-technical phrase that is used around Hollywood studios for Westerns? I'll give you a brass fig de gee with an oak leaf palm if you can tell me that one. And, incidentally, I wonder how many of you know the slang phrase that they use around Hollywood studios for people who go to Westerns. You'd love to hear that one. Didn't know that one, did you? Oh, wow. They know what they're aiming at. I love that big sign that hangs over Times Square. It says, "Get more out of life. Go to a movie." That's real life to a lot of people. You know, speaking of that nutty moment of real life where it begins to impinge on you, I've begun to believe that there's just no justice at all. It just doesn't exist. And if it does exist, it is only a coincidental thing. It just sort of happens. As you probably know, a couple of weeks ago, you'll appreciate this, Skip, because it's about your beloved Florida. A couple of weeks ago, I go down to Florida for a couple of days on business, see? And I'm down there in the Fort Lauderdale area, and oh, it's beautiful. You know, the sun is hanging down. Give me a little romantic music. I'll wait, hold it there for a second, and I'll give you the cue for the romantic music. I have left the hard, cold winter temperatures here in New York City, and the wind is howling down Sixth Avenue and screaming through the naked trees in Central Park, and I'm knee deep in you know what as I'm walking on the crosstown streets where the poodles have walked before me and the beer cans and the cigar butts. And oh, you know, you get to the point at a certain stage of winter, you had it already, you know, you've really had it. And you just hate it. You're just bugged. And by one of those great quirks and twists of fate, I have been called to Florida on a special 2 or 3 day business trip. And I jump on the plane. And I haven't been to Florida since I was in the Army, you know, down there. And that was a very different scene. I'm in the Everglades. Very, very different scene. And now I'm on the plane. Oh, it's fantastic. You know, they, it's really going, it's really, oh, and he says they shouldn't have cut away for that ridiculous, unreal life adventure that they were having out there in space. Oh, I'll tell you how they could have made it. I'll tell you, that guy would have been interested if they had announced to him that Batman and Robin were in the capsule. Then he would have watched it. Then he would buy it all the way. Oh, I'm not interested in, no, no. I'm sorry he's listening. Tell him to go down the dial or something else for him. Come on, don't waste your time. Come on. I don't want to hear, I don't have time. I don't have time for greasy kids, of whatever age they might be. But, I'm in the plane, see, and the plane takes off and immediately they give me a martini. And you know I found that one thing. I won't even name the airline, but I found that one fascinating thing. Have you seen those ads that they always show on television about Florida? And it shows this guy, and he's always standing by the pool, and everybody's cha-ching, or they're all doing the twist, or they're all doing the frog, or the monkey, and whatever it is, you know, there's a whole bunch of people, and they're all lying there on deck chairs, and he says, "Hey, come on down, will ya? Come on!" And he yells, and somebody hollers, "Hello, 522 Madison Avenue, hi, 522 Madison Avenue," and somebody jumps up and hollers, "Hey, hello, Grand Concourse! Hi, Grand Concourse." Well, you've seen those things. Well, I am down. I'm not down in Florida 5 minutes when I discover that is a whole imported pack of models they bring down there. Did you know that? Yeah, they bring them down there. They fly them down there. All they have to do is jump up and holler, "Hi, Grand Concourse. Hey, hey, hello, hi me." You know, I find this whole scene is, you know, it's all showbiz and yard wide. But I arrived down in Florida, and the sun is beating down. I can't believe it. I step out of the plane, and it hits me immediately. It's really warm. I mean, it really is warm. It's about 80 degrees, and it's about 8:30 or 9 o'clock in the airport, and I step out, and immediately I smell that Florida air. There's a kind of yeasty quality to Florida air. It's like dead fish. And that's part of it. After all, you know, this is a place that isn't over 50 feet above sea level at any one place, you know. And I could smell the swamps, and I could smell the coconut juice and the whole scene. I step out of the airplane. I can't believe it. It's really warm. And for about a minute and a half, I sort of reel back. You know, that strange feeling you get when you walk out of a movie back into real life, and you have a feeling like you want to run back in the movie house. Because it doesn't seem real out there for a minute. Well, it seems very unreal for about the first 5 minutes. It's so warm, and there are people walking around. They're all brown, and there's tall, skinny, stringy ladies walking around the place with sunglasses on. It's 8 o'clock at night, the whole bit. And so I walk through the airport terminal, and I pick up the phone. I call a hotel where I'm going to stay. And the next morning, I'm looking out, of course, out of the cab, and I'm driving along the big wide. So the first thing that hits me, of course, is you can park anywhere. Just, you can't believe it. You know, I feel like just buying about 500 cars and taking them down there and parking them. Just, you know, just to feel the sense of power. Just parking a car, backing it up, and driving around, and you can park. And I take this cab, and I arrive at the hotel, and I go up to the 10th floor or the 11th floor, wherever it is, and there's a big picture window, and I open it up, and down there I can see the ocean. It's right below me, the surf. And it's laying it out there. Bow. Bow. I can see the lights down of the town below me. And the next morning I wake up and it's bright and sunny and the breeze is blowing through. I'm probably the only guy who turned off all the air conditioning and everything. I don't want this scene. I want the real stuff. You know, the air is blowing. You'd be surprised how many people go down there and they bring their cold weather with them. They do, yeah. They're so used to rotten weather that they have it produced artificially in their room by the air conditioning. And it's, you know, 32 degrees in their room, and outside the temperature sits at 74. Perfect. And somehow they gotta have air conditioning. And this is all part of that Batman sick artificial world. Oh, sure. I'm constantly surprised at the number of people who go to a place like Florida and they spend their entire 2 weeks sitting in some crummy, rat-infested, smoky, rotten, lousy, overpriced nightclub. That's all they do. And they don't leave their room during the day. They sit around and they paint their toenails or keep calling up room service for orange juice. And would you believe it or not that in Florida hotels down there, it's kind of surprising, but nevertheless they have it down there, that this hotel had a room where they had nothing but sun lamps for people that didn't like to go out in the air, you know, with the real thing out there. So they sit around in sun lamps, and they had a swimming pool with the ocean out there, the most magnificent ocean. They had a swimming pool, you know, like at the Y. So I'm walking around the next day. Now we're getting to the point of the story here. And you'd be surprised at what strange your eye is extremely sharp the minute you're taken into another environment. This is one of the reasons why I like to advocate travel for people. I mean, people who feel that their life is in a rut, and they, you know, most of the time you don't even know your life is in a rut. I doubt whether many people who are in a rut know it. The genuine people who are genuinely in a rut have no idea they're in a rut, not at all. It's just like they often say that the truly neurotic people don't know they're neurotic. They think all the rest of the world is going nutty. And, you know, everything is just the same as it always was with them, except, you know, there's a lot of rotten stuff happening all around them, and they can't figure out why everybody's getting so rotten. And I think this is true of guys that are in ruts. They don't really know they're in a rut. And I've known poor klutzes who every year, you know, every minute of the waking hour, they do exactly what they've done for years before, even to buying the same kind of pastry from the little cart that they push around on the 20th floor at 10 o'clock for the coffee break. He would never think of getting the strawberry whoopie instead of the cinnamon twist. And if you ask me, he says, well, I like cinnamon twist. I always get cinnamon twist. I'd say, well, you know, there was a time when you tried a cinnamon twist and it was the first one. Have you ever tried the strawberry whoopie? Oh, no. Give me a cinnamon twist. That's all right. I'll try it someday. Life is a well-defined, oily, very comfortable, solid, inescapable groove. And he's in it. See, he's in this rut. Well, you take the same guy and all of a sudden you drop him into a totally, alien, unknown environment. And he will either do one of two things. He will either be extremely excited and dig it. He'll really be fascinated. After an initial period, depending on how much a rut the guy's in, after a brief period of confusion, a vague yearning, a vague feeling, gee whiz, I want to get back to that rut. I want to get back to it. Then he will either do one of two things. Either he will find his own version of his old rut in this environment that he is now in, or he will suddenly feel totally liberated. And he will say, wow. And he will see things with a clarity that he has never really experienced in years. It's a kind of vision where suddenly your eyes become very sharp. Even physically, your whole body becomes suddenly attuned to things. You have a different look in the eye. And you're seeing things clean and I suppose from a very different standpoint than you ever have. Every time I go on a trip, when I went to the Amazon jungles, if any of you are interested in reading a book that probably comes as close to a genuine description of what it is like in the upper Amazon jungles, where I spent a brief period here last year, if those of you who remember it, if you're interested in reading an unbelievably exciting book along this line, it was written by an explorer who was killed in that same jungle in 1957. A book called The Rivers Flow East. And it's a man named Kenneth Clark. Really, it's exactly the way it is there. Including the fantastic, unbelievable, harassing, vindictive, angry insect life that is everywhere. And so the minute you land in an unknown environment, you see things with great clarity. You'll walk around. Either that, again, I must say, either that or a man goes into a peculiar kind of funk. Have you ever seen an animal that is a kind of a badly adjusted animal that is totally involved in one little corner of its room? It lives on a certain little pile of rags. It eats a certain kind of thing. Its life is very definitely circumscribed. And you take that animal suddenly and you change the whole situation around. You take it to a new house. You give it a new bed. Now, the animal will do one of two things. Either that animal will practically die. It'll curl up and lie there and not eat. Or else it is liable to be very excited and suddenly be like a different animal. It'll jump up and down and do things that it never did before. That's the way with men. And I've noticed many people, many people, react that way when they're taking a trip. And that's why in so many tourist havens, they reproduce as much as possible the same rut that the guy came from. The same old ridiculous rut. They give him the same food that he's always eaten instead of having him experiment with the native food. I wonder how many people that go down, say, to Miami Beach or to go down to Fort Lauderdale on their 2 weeks in Florida, I wonder how many people eat exactly the same food that they eat on Fordham Road. They immediately look for the Chinese restaurant, you know. Yeah, instead of experiencing some of the truly exotic American southern cooking that is available down there, which they would never get on the Grand Concourse. They would never get it in Boston. And so you go to a place like Florida, and believe it or not, right in the middle of Miami, you can get catfish steaks. You can. You can get stuff like grits and hominy and all the traditional southern lime pies and one thing or another, which you would never get out. And yet the guy in the well-defined groove and rut will not buy this. He will not do it. He'll buy the same thing that he's always had. Hey, ask him if they got some bagels and lox. Yeah. You know, same thing he's had since he was 2 years old. He would never think of changing. And yet he thinks he's on a vacation. And all he has done is changed rooms. It's a little more expensive room that he was living in, but he changed his rooms. But anyway, I get down to Florida, and I'll give you an illustration of that kind of thing in absolutely dynamic action. And also a terrible illustration of there ain't no justice. There is no justice in this world. None at all. You know, one thing about going to a place like an open environment, I could suggest this to you. If, as an old world traveler, I've been all over the East. I've been in the Middle East. I've been in Africa. I've been in the bush in Nigeria. I've been in the bush in Peru. I've been there really, and I can tell you one thing that you should do when you go to any place. Do a lot of the things which you would consider silly back in your town. In other words, take the tour. Really, you should. And so you see a sign that says boat trip, $3. Take it. Because you will suddenly see a whole new world. And I don't mean necessarily physically. I mean just the whole morality and the attitudes and the whole mystique of this place suddenly comes much more alive than if you decide to go down to the El Cocorino nightclub, the Kit Kat Club, and see if you can buy yourself a couple of gin slings and sit there and watch the cha-cha band. Oh boy, I can't imagine a more boring vacation. And yet they flock to those nightclubs. This is, to me, is Boringsville from the word go. But I'm walking around, it's the next morning, see, and there's a boat down there on the inlet, about three boats. One of them says Captain Bill. Another one says the Dragon. And they've got big signs, and it says Gulf Drift Fishing. $3. 5 hours of drift fishing in the Gulf Stream. And it gives the hours, 8 to 1, and from 2 to 5, something like that. And so I say, huh, that's not a bad idea. So the next morning, I go down there, and I said, I'll just drift around. I'll take a look at the Gulf Stream, and I'll sit on this boat. Fishing, all right, so you go out to do it, but you're not serious, and that's it, just fun. And so I go down there, and I pay him my $3, and 5 minutes later, I'm sitting on the boat, and out we go into the Gulf. Give me a little romantic music there. Out we go into the Gulf Stream. Oh, boy. The sun is laying over that horizon, just laying it down. You can see the gulls and the pelicans sweeping low next to the boat. Ah, you can smell that salt water. That green Gulf Stream flowing on endlessly, timelessly, forever. And you can see the coastline of Florida beginning to recede. Now it's lying just like a thin line out there. there behind us. Oh, boy. And the guy comes along and he gives you the fishing pole. And it's got a great big fish on it for bait with about 9 giant hooks. And you figure, boy, if anything bites that fish, that's bigger than any fish I ever caught. It's going to be big. And you sit there with all these people, cheek by jowl, floating, drinking beer and drinking Cokes, floating. And directly behind me is this little fat lady with a flowered dress. You know the kind with the sunflower sunglasses, the big pops under, and you could hear her girdle creak and sing. And she's got her fishing pole in the water, and she's complaining constantly. She is talking to her husband, that steady rain. Hey, man, I told you. I don't know. It's hot. It's hot. Oh, gee, man. Well, when you get in, don't you forget to call Myrtle. Yes. And you know that. And we're all sitting there floating, and she's complaining. And then suddenly the captain says, pull in your lines, everyone. We're going to go to a new location. And then she says, oh, my line is hooked on the bottom. Oh, here, will you do something about it, Ike? Oh, wow. And he starts pulling it in. And the next thing I know, there is a giant 7-foot sailfish leaping high out of the Gulf Stream on the end of this little complainer's line. And she says, oh, I told you we shouldn't have come. Oh, look, there's something hooked. And that fish is clearing the water. That magnificent 7-foot, magnificent, beautiful fish. And all my life, I wanted to catch one thing just like that, one thing. And I could see 100 fishermen all sitting there looking angry. And they landed that fish, and she kept saying, oh, now what are we going to do with it? I told you, Ike, we shouldn't have come. Oh, yeah, wow. Yes, there ain't no justice in this world. And that poor blue steel, magnificent silver gray sailfish lay on the bottom of that boat, caught by the worst fisherman in the Western Hemisphere who didn't even want him. And she says, oh, let's throw it back. Oh, gee. Oh, and the gulls flew overhead, and a great big fat old pelican went past going, wah, 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 wah. And I knew I was in Florida. I knew it.
This is WOR Radio, your station for news.
We didn't invent the wheel at American Motors, but we've made it safer for you to be behind one. For the past 5 years, we've put double safety brakes on every car we've built. And since 1940, all of our cars have featured stronger single-unit body construction. Safety door latches? We've had them since 1957. All of these safety advances were introduced by us as standard equipment. Do you remember the first seatbelts on a U.S.-built car? The year was 1950, and our cars wore them. And special safety headrests have been an option with us since 1959. For 1966, every American Motors car comes equipped with safety padded instrument panels, front and rear seat belts, outside mirror, backup lights, windshield washers, and variable speed non-glare wipers. Ambassador, Marlin, Rambler Classic, Rambler American, cars built with you and your safety in mind. From American Motors, where quality is built in, not added on.
This is WOR AM and FM New York. The WOR time signal, 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Time for Lester Smith and the news. Good evening. It's 11 o'clock on this Thursday, March 17th. This is Lester Smith in the WOR newsroom with all the latest news, late sports, stocks, and weather. The New York Stock Exchange today took concrete action to indicate its vigorous opposition to Mayor Lindsay's proposal for an increase in the stock transfer tax, by canceling plans to construct a new $50 million stock exchange headquarters in Lower Manhattan. At the same time, New York Stock Exchange President Keith Funston disclosed that study groups have been assigned to check out several possible new locations for the exchange in Newark, Jersey City, Hoboken, and Weehawken, New Jersey. The move stems from the exchange's claim that Lindsay's proposals for increasing the stock transfer tax, designed to bring the city an estimated $50 million annually in new revenues, are discriminatory and are placing an unfair burden on investors, particularly out-of-state investors. Twice before, the stock exchange has headed off similar tax increases by threatening to leave the city. In 1933, the New York Stock Exchange leased facilities in Newark. That tax bill was vetoed by the mayor. In 1959, Mayor Wagner dropped a proposal for a stock transfer tax in view of the threat of the move by the exchange. Gemini 8 astronauts Neil Armstrong and David Scott are now flying back to Cape Kennedy, Florida from Okinawa to try to provide some further details as to what went wrong in the Gemini 8 mission last night. They left at 9:45 after being brought to Okinawa aboard the destroyer Mason, which plucked them out of the waters of the Pacific late last night. They were in excellent spirits and fine physical condition. However, it was disclosed afterwards that the two astronauts in those 3 hours that they sat in the Pacific Ocean waiting pickup yesterday suffered from seasickness. The astronauts underwent 2 physical exams aboard the Mason. There were no signs of any problems despite the extreme difficulties they faced when their spacecraft suddenly started bucking and jolting out of control for a time after the Gemini 8 had docked with the Agena satellite. The spacecraft on the deck of the destroyer Mason was scorched black. Meanwhile, NASA officials said today they don't know yet what caused last night's near disaster. Gemini mission director William Schneider said that all they know now is the spacecraft began its wild gyrations after completing the link-up. They do not know, however, whether the fault was with the spacecraft, the satellite, or a combination of both. Despite yesterday's crisis, Dr. Robert Gilruth, the director of NASA's Manned Space Center in Houston, said today that preparations for Gemini 9, now scheduled for about May 26, are going right ahead as if nothing happened to Gemini 8. The Indonesian Army disclosed tonight for the first time just what's happened to pro-Chinese Communist Deputy Prime Minister Sumandrio and 15 other ministers who had been arrested last weekend when President Sukarno signed over his powers to Army Chief of Staff Suharto. The Army said that Sumandrio and the other cabinet members were being held under protective custody to protect them from becoming victims of the Indonesian people. We'll have more news in a moment. Have you ever seen an O'Reilly Ridge grill? It broils meat to perfection right on the top of your stove. No messy oven to clean. The O'Reilly Ridge grill has high ridges to sear the meat deliciously and deep grooves to catch the fat. It's only $4.98, beautifully made of cast aluminum. Because there are so many wonderful advantages to this simple new way of cooking, the O'Reilly Manufacturing Company would like to send you a free color brochure with full description and pictures. Just write Grill, WOR, New York 18, or call Plaza 76300 day or night. No salesman will call afterward. The O'Reilly Ridge Grill is not a gadget. It is a lifetime cooking utensil, a single utensil that's perfect for steaks, chops, burgers, franks, and bacon. Remember, meat never lies in grease, so it's healthfully fat-reduced and much more delicious. Learn more about this easy new way to cook. Write or call for this interesting free brochure. Write Grill, WOR, New York 18, or phone Plaza 76300 day or night. Call Plaza 76300 right away. Back to the news, United States Ambassador Henry Cabot Lodge tonight is reported to have told Buddhists and other groups in Saigon that the United States is supporting the 9-month-old government of Premier Nguyen Cao Ky against domestic opponents who are pushing for an early end to military rule. The United States does not view turbulent demonstrations such as the recent Buddhist rallies demanding a civilian government as the right way to press for political changes. Assistant Secretary of State William Bundy said that while Red China does have expansionist goals, it has been careful to avoid any direct military confrontation with the United States since the Korean conflict. And he says he sees no evidence that Peking plans to take any extreme action such as entering the Vietnam War. In the war, American and Australian troops are hacking their way through the jungles north of Saigon in a search for one, perhaps two or three regiments of North Vietnamese regulars. Democratic Senator Wayne Morse of Oregon has renewed his demand that President Johnson go before the United Nations and propose a Vietnam ceasefire to be policed by a UN peacekeeping force. Morse also said the United States would be much better off if Republican Barry Goldwater had been elected president in 1964. The Oregon senator said that a Democratic-controlled House and Senate in that event would have imposed checks on the escalation of the war instead of giving the president partisan support. A 2-month search for a missing United States nuclear bomb off the Spanish coast has ended in apparent success when a midget submarine reported locating the weapon in 2,500 feet of water in the Mediterranean, 5 miles off Palomares, Spain. The bomb, with its parachute still attached, appeared to be intact, indicating there'd been no radioactive leakage into the water. The bomb had been missing since an Air Force B-52 and a jet tanker collided in midair and crashed near Palomares. There were repercussions all over the world, as grave fears were evidenced over the danger of radioactivity. We'll have more news in a moment.
Or maybe we won't. Gene Shepherd and 6 minutes of the latest news of March 17th, 1966. That's it for the dustbin of history. I'm your curator and janitor, Max Schmid. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with more of the same. And Sunday night, 8 to 10, for the golden age of radio.
Hi, George. Well, finished with the show. What do you want me to do now?
Did you have a good time in there?
Yeah. Oh, boy, it was fun.
Great. How'd you like to do it every day?
Yeah. That would be neat. Hey, wait a minute. Do I still get to be the janitor?
Sure.
Oh, okay. It's a deal.